Hello and welcome to the Dyslexia Quest, where we come together as a community and delve into the inquiry of the power of the dyslexic mind via conversations with experts on all sorts of topics, including individual differences and education, human flourishing, optimized learning environments, and the dyslexic strengths. I'm Ellie Sheva Schwartz, your host, and I hope you enjoy the conversations and this broader inquiry as much as I do. And now, on to the show. Hey guys, so let me know if this sounds like you. Do you secretly wonder if your child's going to be able to make it in the cruel, fast-paced, competitive marketplace? Do you feel burned out and exhausted, always needing to be the expert? Are you worried about how your child will adapt to high school or college? Are you afraid of that twinkle in your child's eye just isn't coming back? Are you constantly worried about not doing the right thing? Maybe you should be doing more with your child, or maybe you're overworking and stressing your child, or maybe there's something else that you should be doing that you're not be doing with your child. Do you crave a sense of community, a sense of being surrounded by other moms and dads with beautiful, quirky, non-traditional learner children that are all struggling and thriving in all the same ways that you are? I know a lot of you guys feel that way because the majority of my email messages that I get reflect on exactly the sentiments. And that's why I'm going to be offering you guys this training. And I'm offering this one training, this free online interactive workshop, and I'm going to be giving it at a couple different time zones, dates and times, so that I can make sure that all of you guys have an opportunity to hop on the call when it works for you. And if you look at all those times and you're like, none of those times work for me, then we will send you a recording after the call. But I'm making this training so we can talk about all these topics. We can talk about what it means to feel just completely like utterly exhausted. We can talk about fear around wondering if your child's going to have the self-esteem and self-confidence that they need to feel alive and be in touch with their gifts and confidence and all these things that are really alive and active in a lot of our minds and hearts as we are parenting these beautiful little beings. So hop on the call. And we're also going to be in the end talking a little bit about my 8-week course that we are opening the doors to in the spring semester. So I get a ton of emails from you guys saying, you know, I want to join, and tell me about your course. And I'm always like, we only open the doors at very specific times. You know, we have a fall semester, we have a spring semester. So if this is something that you are interested in as well, we will be talking about it in the end. And there's also going to be an opportunity to get a free one-on-one session with me. And I very rarely am opening the doors to having one-on-one sessions. And most of my time and effort I'm putting into you guys, the podcast, and my people that take my course. So if that is something that interests you, then come on to this free interactive online workshop that we're doing together. You can sign up either by clicking the link in my Instagram bio @thedyslexiaquest on Instagram, or in the show notes on iTunes right over here. We have it linked in. Make sure to register because the tickets go very quickly. We only have the webinar software only allows 100 emails to register, and they get filled up very quickly. So if this is something that interests you, make sure you register, make sure you get a ticket. And oh my gosh, it's my absolute favorite thing. I log on to these trainings and I just see the webinar software fill up with so many of you guys, and there's this real sense of community and we're in it together, and I get to get a sense of who you guys are and your stories and see what's up for you. And we have a little bit powwow about things that are important, things that make a difference. So we are going to be talking about the 5 shifts that supercharge your child's sense of self-esteem, regardless of the school environment. So if you want to learn those 5 shifts to supercharge your child's self-esteem, then you are going to love this free workshop that I am giving this April. So make sure you claim your free ticket and hop up on the call. And I'm like, oh, I'm so excited to meet you guys and hear a little bit about your story and what's going on, and just seeing your names and your faces pop up on the webinar software. It moves me absolutely to tears. So looking forward, hope to see you on the other side, and now on to the podcast. Hello, questers. So for this week's podcast, I am really excited to be taking a really deep dive and quest onto this entire topic of giftedness and gifted needs and students that are both struggling traditionally in school and are also having needs, learning needs that are not being met because they're being understimulated. And many of you guys know I'm fascinated with this concept of 2E, how triggering some words around giftedness, the in club, the out club, and all the topics around it. And I've done several podcasts on it. And for this week's podcast, Julie Skolnick is the perfect person to quest with me. And I say this in the podcast, but when I came across her website, which is titled With Understanding Comes Calm, I just felt like she gets it. She totally gets it. And she is such a powerful advocate and voice on these topics. She's the founder of With Understanding Comes Calm, and she passionately guides parents of gifted and distractible children, mentors 2E adults, and collaborates and advises educators and professionals on bringing out the best and raising self-esteem in their students and clients. She has an online conference. She's just amazing. It was a fascinating talk. And we talked about my childhood experiences, which you guys know you hear a lot about. And I think you guys are going to get so much out of this episode. I think it's a really important dimension when you're understanding, you know, non-traditional learners and learners that are those round pegs being squished into square holes, and to really have that understanding that will bring that calm. So now without further ado, buckle up in your seatbelts and join the amazing quest. Oh, something I want to talk to you guys about. I am so lit up and inspired by your ratings and reviews on iTunes. I've said this before, but every few days I need to fill up my tank and I need to get connected to the people that this podcast is touching and what's really happening over here and if it actually is impacting people's lives and how. And I sit down and I read through the ratings and reviews and I gaze into who you guys are and what you're about and how the podcast has influenced you. And I'm like, yes, let's do this. It just fills me up to do this work. I get connected to why I'm doing it and the impact that it's having on people. So if this podcast has touched you in any way, hop over to iTunes at the ratings and review and let me know, because I know Megan and I read them all the time and it really inspires us to do this work. And it's definitely a labor of love. It's completely just fueled by feeling like I'm making a difference for people. And this is, you know, this is meaning something to people and it's helping people. So if that is you, then let me know, because then we become more of a community and we start dialogue. So I would love that. And if you're not following us at the Dyslexia Quest, go ahead, follow us at the Dyslexia Quest. I create tons of content just for Instagram, informational content, infographics, dyslexia quotes, tons of dyslexia specific content on Instagram. So if you're more visual and you want to follow a really empowering strength based Instagram account, go ahead and follow us at the Dyslexia Quest. That is me. And now for real, without further ado, onto the podcast. So hi, Julie, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Elisheva. Thanks for having me.
So tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So my name is Julie Skolnick, and I am the founder of a service called With Understanding Comes Calm. And that's sort of my mantra in raising my three awesome, twice exceptional children. And if there's anything that has to do with twice exceptional or 2E, gifted with a learning difference or a learning disability, I'm your girl. So I guide parents and I mentor 2E adults. I train teachers and I collaborate with clinicians, all about how to bring out the best and raise self-esteem in twice exceptional children.
Yeah. And I love the name of your website and your company, With Understanding Comes Calm. And that was one of the reasons I reached out to you, because I heard that name and I just felt like this is why I do everything I do with my podcast, is to help people make sense of their experience and to help people kind of organize what's going on so that they can have that understanding. And then with that broader understanding comes the calm. And I love that you use that as kind of like an overarching title. So to get started, why don't you tell me a little bit more about what that phrase means to you and why it had so much resonance in your work?
So sure. So I actually remember when I said it. I was talking to a friend about one of my kids and how misunderstood their experience was. And I remember I phrased in a way what was going on for him. And the person I was speaking to is also in sort of the twice exceptional world. And I just said, yeah, with understanding comes calm. And then I was like, oh my gosh, that is totally the truth. And so what that means to me really, Elisheva, is, there's this cycle for success that I call it. So I take clients through the cycle for success where we start with understanding. And once we get that calm, we can move on to strategies, durable strategies. And then we talk about advocacy. And I say that the circle keeps going around and around because you have to advocate for understanding, because you have to have that understanding first. That is the baseline. In any relationship, somebody wants to be understood, right? So very often with our population of twice exceptional, gifted with a learning difference or a learning disability, we say behavior is communication. But that communication based on the behavior is not really clear because there's so much intricacy that goes into this profile. So often they're not understood or they're misunderstood. And so if you have an adult who understands you as a child, or by the way, if you're an adult and you have another adult who understands you as a 2E person, it is really refreshing and it takes away so much armor. I think it's really important to understand the difference between misunderstanding and not understanding. So you can be not understood, right? But you might not be judged. When you're misunderstood, and so often twice exceptional kids are misunderstood. It's kind of like, oh, they're lazy. They're not trying. They're afraid to take risks. They don't want to be challenged. You know, they have it so easy. There are all these myths and assumptions. And so gifted and twice exceptional people have a lot of intensity. And very often that intensity will come off in a way that may, as my 15-year-old would say, repel somebody. And when the opposite is true, there might be this incredible amount of empathy. So there's so much room for misunderstanding, so that if you are understood, there's an incredible amount of work that you can do.
Yeah. It brings me right to this anecdote that I wanted to talk to you about that kind of is really at the core for me around this topic of giftedness. I remember when I was in school and I was in high school and I went for another battery of testing, even though I did a couple different testing in elementary school, and the school kind of didn't know what to do with me, and I went and I got a psychological evaluation and psychoed evaluation, and my parents hid it from me. And I remember I was in high school and I came across it in my mother's bathroom. And the first line said, you know, Elisheva is an average student with average intelligence. And just feeling so shaped, like I felt torn apart by it, because I was both struggling in school and really struggling from being like profoundly bored and understimulated, and really craving like a depth that I wasn't experiencing, and like I wasn't close to the level of engagement that I have opportunity to have now as an adult, being in control of my life and my interests and my curiosities. And I remember being so excited about this psychoeducational eval, hoping for that like mirroring experience where it would be kind of like a raft being sent to me, and then getting it mirrored back, like, oh, this is what it means to be a person in the world. You're just like everybody else. You're having a regular person. You're just kind of average, and you have average intelligence. And I remember that, like, feeling so wrecked by that, and it stayed with me for years, that, like, that, you know, that one line. And then people that have listened to the podcast, whenever I talk about some of these categorizations and assessments, they've heard about this assessment. But later on, he went to write that, you know, I was trying to manipulate the adults in my environment to get compassion. Like, it was a really, really misunderstanding experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are people here that are listening to this that are saying, you know, I feel like I had needs that weren't addressed, or I feel like my child has gifted needs that aren't addressed, but the teacher says they're not gifted. Or I'm afraid that if my child goes for testing and he doesn't get the, he's not, you know, in whatever category, then we're out of options. So what do you think is the relationship between people's experience that they have needs that are not being addressed, and people feeling like this gifted category or label helps them make sense of their life, and this kind of like objective sense of like of testing or of our our instruments for measuring this way of being?
Wow, so much to say. First of all, I guess
I like to come in heavy.
Woo! Okay, so I hope everybody sit back, get a cup of coffee. I hope you're in your jammies, because it's going to be a long time. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, I get chills when something is important and I'm meant to address it. So like 3 or 4 times while you're talking, you know, I'm like, anyway, there's so much to say. So first of all, it's okay to hate your neuropsychological report.
That's amazing.
I have clients, I say to my parent clients, I don't care if you share your neuropsych with me. I'm here for you. What your perspective is, I'm all about the now what. So it has to do with parenting. It has to do with your perspective. So many people are like, shoo, I hate this neuropsych report. It doesn't describe my kid, or it doesn't describe me, or whatever it is. So you can, there's a lot of bad neuropsychological reports out there. And frankly, I really refer only to a couple of psychologists who really get 2E, because the person has to get, it's a little weird. You have to actually understand what the profile is before you try to assess the profile, right? And so how do you know that? That's a whole group of questions that you asked of your assessor. I'm also going to bring up, and I made a note here as you were talking, oppositional defiant disorder. I hate that label. I don't use that label. I think it's pretend. I'm just going to stand up very straight over here and shout it out. I think it's a fake diagnosis. I think it means that the adults don't get what's going on. Okay, so that you were trying to manipulate someone, you know, I can't even imagine how that makes you feel. Except for that that puts your parents squarely at that time in the advocacy role. Because if the greatest thing about that was, I'll tell you what the greatest thing about that in your neuropsych report was, it gave your parents a clue into what other people are going to say about you that aren't true. Okay, so that's how I look at it. I'm all about positive reframe strength based. As far as the gifted category, so, you know, there's so much controversy in the gifted category. And I'm kind of like, you know, this one doesn't come with a receipt. You can't return it. And thank God we have a positive moniker for something that's so challenging, right? Because you look at, for instance, ADHD, oh my God, disorder is even part of the title of that diagnosis of creativity and the ability to actually pay attention to a million things at the same time, but needing to move. You know, dyslexia. In your reviews, people are always saying, oh my God, now I think of it as something positive. Yes, different is great. So all of that has to be taken into account. When you have these dual exceptionalities where you're gifted, which I'm going to tell you, when I teach about gifted, that ability piece, the way everybody defines gifted, smart, able, bright, potential, that's like a teeny piece. You can see me, I'm holding my fingers up and they're like making maybe 1/2 inch space. That's the experience of gifted. Gifted is really a synchrony. Gifted is really perfectionism and anxiety. Gifted is really intensity. So when you have these dual exceptionalities, gifted and then a learning difference or learning disability, the gift, that ability piece or the expectations can mask the challenge, and the challenge can mask the gift. And that's what happened in your report. So you came out average. It kind of canceled each other out. And we see that a lot. And with gifted kids, that either denies them admission into a gifted program, or they just kind of fly under the radar. So, you know, there's lots written about gifted underachievement, and self-esteem, of course, comes into this. The other thing I want to say, Elisheva, is, and I'm really, really digging in about this. I have a monthly blog, and this March's blog is going to be about this. And it's looking at the 2E experience through a trauma-informed lens. Mm. You experienced trauma all through your childhood by being misunderstood. And then you had a double whammy. You had to overcome what everybody was like, you were feeling everybody was thinking about you. And then you saw it in black and white. If you take on average a 2E kid's experience who has social emotional challenges or impulsivity, they're redirected probably 40 times a day at least. 40 times a day. Think about when you're getting your kids ready for school, or you're getting yourself and you're giving yourself negative messaging, or you're redirecting how many times you say your kid's name as you're trying to get them out of the door. It adds up. And it is trauma to hear those assaults on you and your name. So I totally get your experience. And I just want to hug you right through the computer.
Oh, I mean, that means so much to me. And I feel the hug. But like you said, the best thing about this experience was the advocacy part. I always say that the best thing about the experience was that it really put a fire in my belly to bring some awareness around these terms and to talk for the people that are feeling, you know, misunderstood by their diagnosis, that are thinking that it's like an x-ray that's going to tell them, you know, exactly what is and isn't happening, and they're going to have that mirroring experience and be seen compassionately and understood. And sometimes when you make yourself so vulnerable and excited for something and then feel that misunderstood and that let down at that time, it can hurt even more than if you're not getting excited to be, you know, finally understood, finally seen. And with a lot of the parents that are listening to this podcast, they're in that exact stage where they think, you know, finally they're reaching out to, you know, a specialist, and they reach out to the wrong person, and they thought that was going to be their lifeline. And then they get, you know, further languaging around what's wrong with their child, and, you know, it's kind of like a bleak view on what's possible for them, and from a very deficit-based perspective. And, you know, I want to talk to those people that just in their gut, they don't feel like it's right. They don't feel like their child's being seen. They don't see like their child is being seen in their light and in their potential and in their wholeness. And
go with your gut, for sure, parents. Go with your gut. Elisheva, you're rare. I mean, you can see how it would have gone a different way, right? What else could have happened? You could have totally internalized that. You would have become completely underachieving. You could have just kind of like settled. You could have, you know, and
I almost did. I mean, my story is that I ended up dropping out of high school for half a year and couldn't face another day because I felt so just. I really thought that was going to be the last lifeline. And I came in having done so much research and advocating for myself. And I said, I think I have this thing, dyslexia, and I think it's a learning disability. And I've been reflecting, and I know exactly what I need. And this guy, who was this awesome middle-aged person that had a very rigid perspective, he was like, wow, this little high schooler sounds very authoritative about her life and didn't like giving up some of the control, quote unquote, got very triggered by me and made it all about how, you know, I'm trying to control adults in my environment to get what I want, and my Rorschach inkblot test. And just a crazy situation that I really think I only experienced because it was part of what I needed to experience to get me to where I am today. But,
in the gifted world, there's a great, psychologist Kazimierz Dabrowski, who wrote about, have you ever heard of positive disintegration? So positive disintegration theory, you're going to have to Google it. And he literally talks about how to become your best self, you have to experience something so devastating to rebuild yourself, come out of that experience. And the reason the gifted community has taken this theory is because he talks about how people who are more likely to experience this positive disintegration are people who fall into one or more categories of an overexcitability. So five categories of overexcitabilities. You've heard of overexcitability.
I wanted you to talk about it. So I'm glad you're bringing it up because I wrote it down.
Yeah. So Kashmir Zdobrowski came up with this theory, and he said that the people who are more likely to experience positive disintegration are overexcitable, is what he called it, in one of five areas. So intellectual, emotional, imaginational, sensual, or psychomotor. And you can imagine, so first of all, overexcitability sounds like a negative thing, right? You're too much of something. But if you can plug into the world in this really organic way, you can really experience a lot of fulfillment. So intellectually overexcitable, these are the people who, you know, need to know why, but want to know the why behind the why. They're the ones who are constantly questioning and get lost in their thoughts and just really, you know, want to learn more and more. And emotional overexcitability, they have this huge spectrum of emotions, but it goes deeper than that. They can actually feel feelings of other people in the room, not just noticing they're happy or they're sad or they're angry, but actually feeling their feelings. So when I train teachers, this is so important, because if you have an emotionally overexcitable person in your house or your, and we don't outgrow any of this stuff. So, yeah. You know, spouses, everybody, friends, parent, child, adult parent and child. So if you have an experience, you're this raw nerve who experiences everybody's emotions. You're also have a very strong sense of right and wrong. You get attached to people, places, and things. So if you come in from the playground and somebody looked at you wrong, it might affect you more than it would, you know, the average person. Or if something happened in the home in the morning. Or these are important things to really, really understand. And then, you know, imaginational overexcitability. That isn't, you know, ADHD people are very creative. Dyslexic people are very creative. Very often there might be an imaginational overexcitability. And what's so great about that is you use that as a strength and a portal to get toward the challenges. So, for instance, segueing here for a second on using strengths as portals to challenges, I have a client who is dysgraphic. So they have a writing and organizational disability, right? So they have a million zillion thoughts and they can't organize them and get them out on paper. And so what this child's school did was they bought a unicycle and they had him put it together. And then he had to write a manual on how to put it together, how to learn to ride it, right? And so you're using a passion. He was really into the unicycle to go at a deficit, the writing. So all of these overexcitabilities, because they're organic to who the person is, if you understand them and can use them, they can be an incredible way to the back door to shore up struggles without the child really knowing that you're actually shoring up struggles, which is awesome, right? So sensual is the sensory overexcitability, and then psychomotor is that needing to move to learn. And I mean, you could talk about each of those areas for an entire podcast. So I gave you the flavor. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. But it's a very specific characteristic of a gifted profile, those overexcitabilities.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely resonate with all of them, but specifically the emotional and imaginary ones, I think more than the sensual and the moving ones, movement. But it's interesting, even in the language that you use about it, and you mentioned this point right before, this like overexcitability, how we put a judgment in it already instead of, and that's what's nice about this kind of giftedness term, because like imagine putting like, you know, imaginary, like gifted with their imagination, gifted with their, you know, emotional capacities. And
Right. We love to pathologize. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because in America, we love to diagnose and medicate. That's our go-to plan. That's plan A, right? We pathologize everything. And it's real. That informs all of what I do, is I am very strength-based, very much positive reframing. It's so important when you see that, let's go back to that behavior as communication, right? I had my first client, her son was in middle school and he ran out of the classroom. And everybody went crazy over it. They were like, oh my God, how can he do that? He's defiant, blah, blah, blah. And I said, high five to your son, right on. He knew exactly what he needed. Did he disrupt? Did he have a fit? Did he break anything? Did he hurt anyone? Did he, you know, make it all about? No, he removed himself from the class. Okay, of course we're going to talk to him about having a plan so the grown-ups don't have to worry about him. But really, in the grand scheme of things, way to go, dude. You knew exactly what you needed. You were very self-aware.
I love that. I love that. And I remember my first job out of high school, and I've talked about this on the podcast too, is I worked in fashion and I worked for a small fashion company. And I was really coming out of like the malaise of all the trauma of school and constantly being told, you know, I always tried to customize things for me. So I'd always like talk to teachers and be like, can we do this? Can we do that? And there was a lot of like, just do what you're told. Stop trying to change things. Stop like, you know, trying to customize things. Stop trying to reinvent the wheel or have a smarter way to do things. Things that didn't make sense used to drive me crazy. I was like, why do I need to do 25 worksheets? And like, I'm dysgraphic. Am I handwriting? I was like, this is not necessary. And then I was working for this small startup. It was my first job. And it was my first progress report. And I remember my boss wanted me to come into her office and I was having a full-blown panic attack because I never was successful in school. And I always just knew that, like, you try my best. And then I was gearing up for all this negative reinforcement that I always got my entire life from adults. And she was just like, I love how you're full of ideas. You're coming up with better strategies. She's like, we've never had an intern that's like involved, coming up with solutions, is trying to find more efficient ways to do things. And I went into the hallway after and I just burst out crying. And it was like something that made, you know, a very rigid model, like the school system that was a really thorn in teachers, you know, way where they were constantly like, don't ask questions, do what you're told, just listen to assignments. When I came into a different environment, which was like a lean small business where every single person's thoughts and opinions mattered, there was no hierarchy. They were like, wow, you're coming up with creative solutions. You're thinking about what's not necessary. You're coming up with, you know, different ways of doing things. You're advocating for ways of like that you know you need to do that will make it work for you because it doesn't help anybody if you're doing bad work. And I was just so shocked that something that could be such a negative in one environment that my entire life I was told, you know, stop interfering, stop, you know, don't use your voice, just do what you're told, do it the way everybody else is trying to do it, you know, stick, just, you know, fit into a square, you know, little hole. That in another environment, that was the one thing that they were saying, you know, we've had tons of interns, we've never had somebody that actually is contributing, that is bringing another perspective. And so it just was so fascinating.
I have a little, I have a client with a little boy, literally this client is a social worker. So she knows what she's doing. She said to him, can you draw yourself at school? He literally drew himself in a box, a little 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, what are we thinking? Like, do we want to be forefront in anything? Like, why does, you know, it's, I wrote a blog once called Lego My Ego. So for those of you who are in their 50s and 40s, like I am, you'll remember that Lego My Ego commercial, right? So I wrote this blog, Lego My Ego, for parents and teachers. Like, the kids are going to have better ideas. That's a great thing. Pivot. Go with it. And, you know, it's such a bummer, Elisheva, that I love that you went to your teachers with all these different ideas, you know, and we have to understand for many teachers, maybe even most teachers, they go into the profession because they really do love children and they want to teach them but you know, they're put in a box also.
Yeah.
By all the organizations and all the expectations. And so that's, it's really hard. And that's why when we talk about advocacy with clients, it's so important to take that in mind. Everybody has to be not defensive, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody has to be making deposits. I call it making deposits in the bank account of understanding, personal connection, all of those things that are so important.
Yeah. And we have so many amazing teachers and specialists that listen to this podcast. I think my experiences were complicated because especially my teachers, you know, that got to me by high school age, I was filled with already so much rage that like, if it was like an unnecessary worksheet, it was like, yeah, there's no way I'm doing that. So, I mean, when you're thinking of scaling a lesson for an entire class and then you have something that somebody that's very disruptive, but I loved how you brought about that topic of oppositional. Cause I tell, that was a phrase that was like battered around for me, and people that know me now as an adult are just dumbfounded because they're just like, you're the opposite of that. And I always say that for me, it was so clear that I could not survive unless I took the reins of my own life a little bit. So if that meant, you know, I ditched a lot of school and I jumped the fence and there was a forest in the background and I would just, you know, lay on the grass, you know, listening to CDs because I could not survive in that world. And I so much wanted adult approval and I so much wanted to be my teachers not to be mad at me, but I needed survival more than I needed their approval. So like if I could have survived in that world, I would have for sure done the thing that wouldn't get me in trouble and wouldn't have everybody mad at me and wouldn't have like the cortisol going through my veins. I used to be constantly terrified of being found out and being like kicked out of school. What are you doing in the forest? But like, I need a time out. And like, there were some classes like I couldn't sit in and like, I couldn't. And also I think like, you know, the emotional overexcitability that you're talking about of like, you know, there, like, I remember I had a teacher that was going through a really bitter divorce and like, it like just her bitterness was like, I would pick up everything and like so many classes and so many teachers and so much annoying busy work and worksheets and writing things down. And I just like, I need to put my survival before taking care of not disrupting adults. But the funny thing was that, and only I would know that, and somebody looking out would not know that I wanted so much of their approval, but it just was number two, not number one. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, people from the outside that are saying, you know, put more, they obviously, you know, don't care what adults think, or they obviously don't care what teachers think, or, you know, they need to, you know, they need to care more. How could they not care about your feelings? Sometimes it's that, but sometimes it's, you know, it's too much of a threat to their core, just like being able to function in that environment.
Well, and it's with parenting too, right? Because you're the safe place, parents. So they're coming home from this trauma and they're probably taking it out on you. And you know, how great, Elisheva, gee, you're so, you know, you're so defiant. You're out in the forest looking up at the sky, listening to CDs. You know, like, I wish all of my clients' kids were doing that instead of some of the things that they're doing that are really self-harming or you know, just really scary. And a lot of times it comes to that. I really love that you're showing the other side of the coin of oppositional as collaborator. I think that's really interesting. Mm. And it's true. You know, it's kind of like when I train teachers and I talk about the disruptor and I say, make them the leader, put them in charge. They want to be on the stage. It's counterintuitive, but the disruptor wants
to
be.
So brilliant. Yeah.
Put them on the stage, make them in charge, and you will see a huge difference. You know, and I think, yeah, what you're saying is there's not a lot of training for this, you know, in education for educators. And so we go by how our teachers did it or our parents did it. And, you know, we know now that we have a lot of really different ways to respond to our children. And I think that their abilities to cope or not is a lot of it has to do with the amount of screens that they're introduced to and the immediate gratification, what they see, and the influence of others and how others feel about them or talk about them on social media or what they're supposed to look like or what they're supposed to be like or, you know, what people say they're doing with their perfect family over the weekend, but they're really not, but they're just posting it. You know what I mean? There's so much going on. There's so much chatter, so much noise for everybody, whether you're TUI yourself, you're parenting TUI, you're teaching TUI, you know, that class, that perfect classroom where everybody is behaving in quotes, you know, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation put out there.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you're talking about screens, because I think it's a huge issue. And I started thinking about this more because I recently, in the past 2 months or so, listened to a podcast by Jonathan Haidt. Do you know who he is?
Yeah.
He just came out with a book called something about American Fragile Mind, something about how creating like resilient kids and how children are more fragile than ever. And he is a professor at NYU, and he put in a graph that showed that girls between the ages of 12 and 17, the rates of major depressive episodes, and you see like a hockey stick that from 2012, which he speculates has to do with when most girls got social media, the rates of the major depressive episodes just skyrocketing. And I saw that chart. He talked about it on a podcast, and I quickly went online and I Googled the study that he mentioned to see the graph, and the graph came up, and you see this chart, and from the beginning of the chart, it's inclining slowly, and then you see 2012, and bam, it goes, like, the major depressive episodes just skyrocket. And he says it has to do with the time when most girls were on social media. And I was just shocked, because I was like, we've created a world that everybody's struggling to inhabit. Like, with rates increasing this dramatically, it's like, these are the amounts of major depressive episodes that are being written down, but how many people that are just going to sleep feeling gross at the end of the night or feeling unsettled? Like, what about all the, you know, it's affecting everybody at these rates. And I was so just shocked by it, because I know personally, it's hard for me to metabolize. Like, I get on social media and I get triggered. I'm on Instagram after I have my babies and, you know, seeing all like the Fitspo and just whatever it is. And everybody's, you know, shining lives, and everybody somehow is able to have well-dressed children and an amazing career and a beautiful house and vacations and, or just like any interaction that, like, if I see anger, like on Facebook, like on a post, and I'm, whichever reason I'm feel invested in the topic and people are being angry and not nice, it'll stick in my gut and I'll have
that's
to like
emotional overexcitability.
Yeah, exactly what you're talking about. And we're used to having much smaller environments. And now our environments are so much bigger because you put in the phones and you put in social media, so much more chaotic, so much noisier, and it can be really challenging to inhabit.
Yeah, and if you know, who knows what would happen when you found that out way back when, or your parents found that out, and how they would have handled it differently or not based on social media. But social media, you know, there's so much pressure and expectation. So first of all, for a twice exceptional person, there's so many expectations anyway, whether they're real or they're perceived, right? And for, you know, gifted kids, they're very often told how smart they are. Oh, you're so smart. You're so smart. It just rolls off the tongue. But frankly, it dovetails right into a perfectionism and anxiety diagnosis. So that social media, there are, I have seen graphs where it takes when the iPhone came out and the spike in anxiety, and they totally jive. So, you know, what you're saying is true. And the only anecdote is, you know, I recommend 24-hour free zone, screen-free days with families. I recommend talking to your family and yourself about what it means to be on a screen and to put them into sort of different buckets. You know, there's the social time, and then there's the entertainment time, and then there's the learning time, educational time, three buckets. And what percentage do you think you should be spending your time in each of those? And then try to stay true to that. And then to really limit, you know, no phones in the car. That's the time to talk. No phones in the bedroom or screens. And to lean in with your kids, because unfortunately this is the way it is right now. So better to be informed than not informed. So try to learn those games or see what that social media is. Absolutely have your kids' passwords. Absolutely be on your kids' social media footprint and monitor them. You know, and that's hard. I couldn't believe this, Elisheva, I went to a meeting in our local public school about screens. I was really curious to see what they were going to say and how people, and some parents really raised their hand and said, well, how do we know what they're on? And it was like, oh my God, do you have their passwords? You have to have their passwords, you know? And parents, it's a weird, we're not digital natives, most of us, you know? And so it's a weird thing and a privacy thing. But the truth is, I'm here to tell you right now, get your kids' passwords. Know what they're on. Know what they're seeing. Know what people are saying to them. Monitor their texts. This is not a privacy thing. This is a mental health safety thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also complicated because things are changing so quickly. So, like, yeah. But I want to circle back to something you said about the anxiety that comes with being told that you're so smart. And this comes up a lot in the dyslexia community because you have a lot of parents that they themselves have some kind of learning difference, dyslexia, ADHD, and they went through their life feeling like they're stupid. And now they have their second, third graders going through similar things. And the instinct the parent wants to do is say, you're not stupid. You're so smart. You know, here are all these famous billionaire dyslexics. And, you know, here are all these famous artists and sculptors. And what I'm hearing, you know, which is great because we have this wave of the first time where it's being seen in the strength. But I'm hearing from some young kids that they feel like, you know, they're opting out of one box is like, if I need a permission slip, like if I don't do so well traditionally in school, then I need to prove everybody that I'm going to be the next brilliant entrepreneur. I'm going to be the next brilliant artist or sculptor. And it's that extra pressure of, you know, well, I don't want to lose my parents' love. So if, you know, if I'm not going to do well in school, I need to prove that I'm really, you know, I really have the strengths and not just the weakness. It's this extra pressure that comes sometimes when parents are trying to comfort their children and they say, no, you're really, you know, you're so smart and here are all these brilliant people that were dyslexic, that kind of comes off to some children as that they need to earn their title or constantly prove their intelligence or whatever it is.
So there's a couple things that I would say. First of all, when you experience trauma yourself and then you become a parent, you only want to make sure your child does not experience trauma, right? I mean, whether or not you experience trauma, you want to keep your kid from feeling trauma. But if you experience trauma yourself, you are really, it's like a double whammy. So, understandable. There's two things I want to talk about. One is Carol Dweck's work on mindset, if you've heard of that or not. We'll talk about that a little bit. That's praising the process versus the product. And the other thing is reflecting emotions and how important that is. So I'm actually going to start with the reflecting emotions. Mm-hmm. So when a child comes home and is frustrated or, you know, it's so important for us to, or if a child is tantruming over something, right? Sometimes, and this is not manipulation, this is like self-preservation, they're trying to deflect from what's really going on emotionally for them because they know they can trigger somebody and then attention will be on the grown up. So yeah. If I can, you know, tantrum and make my mom scream, she's not going to realize that I'm really upset because I have no idea how to write, read, fill in the blank, whatever it is,
right.
Make friends, whatever it is. So instead, you know, I always say when they go up, we go down. If they're getting big, we get small, you know, quieting your voice and just kind of, wow, you're feeling really frustrated right now. And because they need to learn that they can work through those emotions and that they can sit with those emotions. And then, you know, truth is it's going to be their life and they have to figure out how to be in the world in that way. As far as the other piece, which is that, you know, let's call it a movie star effect, you know, you can feel good about anything you have because, you know, that whole positive reframe that I was talking about before. Sometimes we can go overboard because it's a lot of pressure or a false sense. So Carol Dweck is a psychologist at Stanford University, and she wrote a book called Mindset. And she took two sets of researchers and sent them out with groups of children, having them do pen to paper testing that got increasingly more difficult. And she sent out two groups, and she said to one group of her research assistants, say, you know, praise the product, and one group praise the process. So what did that look like? If you were praising the product, you would say things like, Elisheva, you're so smart. I knew you could do this. Of course you got this. You went through that so quickly. I knew you'd be able to do it, obviously. But the other group, they were more like, Elisheva, I can see this is really hard. You're taking your time and thinking about it. I really like how you're using your scrap paper. I admire the way that you're just pausing and really thinking. Well, group A hit a wall and stopped. And group B went the whole way. So instead of this, like, we think we're building up self-esteem when we're telling kids how great they are. Instead, we need to sort of praise their efforts, the way that they're dealing with something. So you can see how these two sort of ways of talking are related, right? It's all about being okay in the efforts that you're making and noticing those efforts for your child, to help them get to the next level and be okay who they are and to have that resilience and the grit, like Angela Duckworth talks about, the grit to stay in the game.
Yeah. 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 I love that. I kind of have mixed feelings about Angela's work because I find specifically in this population, a lot of parents come across the mindset work and the book is being passed around in parent groups at school. And sometimes a child is having difficulty with what's going on in school just because they have very real learning differences that need to be addressed and they need accommodations. And parents and teachers sometimes are, you know, have been on such a kick about this mindset stuff that they're like, you're doing great. Put one foot in front of another instead of just being like, what's not working?
And yeah, notice what you said, you're doing great. And it needs to be, you're really thinking about what your assignment is. You're really trying to figure out what you, as if, okay, so I agree with you. There is no answer. There's no black and white answer, right? Yeah. So I take pieces of mindset, pieces of grit, and it has to inform how you talk to these kids as opposed to be the, again, you know, I think probably Dweck and Duckworth would be horrified if people were like trying to take this box and put their kid in it.
Oh, for sure.
Pieces of those things and knowing that there's a different way that you just have to be with the child who the child is. And in order to encourage, you know, stick-to-itiveness, right? In order to encourage, like, what made you, Elisheva, continue on your road to keep trying? That was so totally internal. And I don't know what your parents did, but, or if that even mattered, because sometimes it won't even matter. Like, you have to have it innately. And if you don't have it innately, or you need to respond, the point is, as an adult, the way to respond is to notice with verbs what the person is doing. And that is the way.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And I think for sure it's not what, you know, Duckworth or Dweck, what they think. I just think, you know, it's always a game of telephone when these ideas become really popular and all the teachers are talking about that and all the PTA groups are talking about them. It's the answer. And before you know it, you have like a child that like can't read in fourth grade. And, you know, a dad or a mom or a grandparent is like, grit is the answer. I listened to an NPR episode and they're like, grit is grit. And this child is like crying over their spelling words. So I always like to just encourage parents to like take all of it, right? And blend it in and come up with like a cohesive narrative. And, so I love that. We're running out of time. So, there are two questions that I really want to get to. One is if you can, so one's going to be like kind of like a last thinking question, and then I want you to share about what you're up to and how people can reach you, just so you can pace yourself a little bit. But if you can go back to a parenting moment when maybe you were really in the throes of having a challenging time with one of your three children, and somewhere at the beginning of your journey, and you, as having learned all the lessons that you've learned and been seeped in this work, can go back and talk to a younger self and go out to coffee with yourself and give yourself some words of wisdom, what are some words of wisdom you wish you could have told yourself at those moments?
That is such a cool question. It's funny that you should ask that right now. So, you know, this really depends on your children, very specifically. Parenting each child is very different. There are a couple of things I would have said. With one of my kids, one of my older kids, I would have actually really advised myself to explore homeschooling for a certain amount of time. And that's really hard to say and to hear because a lot of people can't homeschool. And maybe that's why I didn't homeschool. But in reflecting recently, which I also recommend, it's reflecting all the time and to be good with your decisions, but to always be looking forward and not looking backward. But since you're asking me to think that way, I'm thinking maybe that's something that I would have considered. The other thing is, I think I would have I would say stop trying to solve every problem for your kid. Try to be in the emotional space to allow them to feel their emotions. As an emotionally overexcitable person myself, try really hard not to get my emotions caught up and to really reflect, attune to their emotions and attune to my own emotions. Why am I feeling this way about this experience my kid is having, and make this more about them than, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going to swoop in and make everything right because these people don't know what they're doing, or these people, you know, or what, I'm going to make it better because I just want to hug him and make it, I'm going to be Mama Bear. You know, and sometimes it's really important to be Mama Bear. One of my kids calls me Mama Bear. He's the one who needed a Mama Bear. And, but actually the way that you can help your child have lasting resilience is to be with them as they struggle instead of taking the struggle from them. And that is so hard.
Wow. That's so poignant. Yeah, so I'm sure people are like really just wanting more from you as we finish the hour. So how can people get in touch with the work that you're doing, follow you, get on the list to get that monthly newsletter, or whatever else?
Thank you. So sure. So withunderstandingcomescalm.com is my website. My email is julie@withunderstandingcomescalm.com, J-U-L-I-E. There's a ton of free stuff on my website. So I have podcasts I've been on, articles I've written. My monthly newsletter is posted there. My monthly blog is posted there. You can subscribe to the newsletter for free, which has tons of articles and is global. And I produce a virtual conference called 2 Days of 2E. The 2018 one is on demand currently through April. 2019 will come out in the fall. Really, really exciting stuff there. I'm all over social media. So Facebook with Understanding Comes Calm, LinkedIn under Julie Skolnick, which I'm sure in the notes you have my spelling of my name. YouTube, I have a channel called Let's Talk 2E. Instagram, Let's Talk 2E. Twitter, at Julie Skolnick. I think that's everything. I'm on Pinterest too. I don't even know. Maybe with Understanding Comes Calm. So yeah, basically if you Google Julie Skolnick with Understanding Comes Calm or Let's Talk to it, you'll find me.
Amazing. Julie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thank you for sharing your memory of your childhood that was so painful and hard. That takes bravery. So thank you.
I feel so seen by you, Julie.
I see you, Elisheva.
Oh, amazing. So I just like everything I wanted in my childhood, I've recreated in this podcast. I just surround myself with like the most loving, the most compassionate, the most like understanding people. And they're just like, Elisheva, you're amazing. I'm like, finally.
So you deserve it. And it was a road. It was a journey. It was a journey.
Thank you.
You got to find your right people.